You're listening to Economics of Place, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Dan Gilmartin.
Welcome to the Economics of Place podcast, a show where we go in depth with interesting people doing extraordinary things in cities. On today's show, I'll chat with Mark Nikita about the work he is doing as an urban designer. Mark's a nationally recognized urbanist, architect, elected municipal leader, developer, educator, retail entrepreneur, and the co-founder and president of Archive DS. As an urbanist, Mark has extensive insight into the creation of pedestrian-oriented built environments and structures, utilizing innovative solutions commonly incorporated into all of his architectural and urban design projects. Mark's currently beginning his third term as a city commissioner and is a former mayor of Birmingham, Michigan, noted as one of the most walkable small cities in North America. Mark's passion and enthusiasm for urban walkable districts has led to a career focused on the redevelopment and enhancement of post-industrial cities and other vibrant built environments. He uses his diverse skill set as a city builder to create places for people that are worth caring about. I had the opportunity to sit with Mark recently in Detroit's busy campus Martius to talk about his work and discuss the latest trends in city making. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, welcome to edition two of the Economics of Place podcast, and I'm joined now by Mark Nikita. As I just told you about in the intro, Mark is an urban designer, an architect, a lot of different things, but a guy who probably cares as much about building great cities as anybody I know. So welcome, Mark. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, great to be here.
So we're coming to you guys today from Campus Martius. We're just off of the actual outdoor facility on the inside of the CompuWare building, a beautiful place. And Campus Martius in downtown Detroit is important for a whole bunch of different reasons. But probably the reason it's important today is it's really the epicenter, I think, of the commercial comeback of downtown. And what I want to talk with Mark about today is basically how you build cities, how you take places that aren't working right now and how you move them forward and how you get folks thinking differently about them and what assets look like and what people can think about as they're thinking about this in their own towns and how they might be turning things around. So tell us a little bit about your experiences here with Campus Martius and what it is, maybe what it was and what it's now and yep. What it all means.
Sure. Well, it's a great, I think, great place to start in terms of city building, because as my office has been downtown for about 30 years, actually I started working here as an intern just a couple blocks from Campus Martius, and I've been part of the downtown development over all of these years since the mid-1980s. And Campus Martius, of course, before it became what it is, was a sort of a car...
forgotten spot,
yeah. It was a real mess. I mean, we had historically a place there, which goes back to when the master plan by Judge Woodward was done in 1805, right? But prior to that, it was, at that time, it was created as a place. And then over the years, it really was until... around the 1950s or so, when it really started to become just a place where cars just zoom around and find their way around the Soldier and Sailor's Monument to the Civil War. I mean, it became this like island, so it was really a mess. And ultimately, when it was thought of as a public space again, and going back to Mayor Archer's master plan, saying, again, this is where planning came in, said, historically this was a place. And it was a place not only in a plan, going back to 1805, but it was a place from the standpoint of a user, the city had it. And ultimately it just lost its way. And now recreating the history of that and creating it as a place again, Campus Martius Square, really. It's not really a park in my mind. It's more of a square. But ultimately, it has become the center of the entire Detroit region.
Right. It's the postcard spot now. It used to be the Renaissance Center, a big hulking building that's sort of closed off to the world. And now more and more, when you see the sort of international pictures of Detroit or people say, here's the community, they're pointing here. And it's a really interesting spot. And I think it speaks to... sort of lessons for everybody is, I don't think many people thought of this as a asset at the beginning of the turnaround, if you will. Like you said, the big Soldiers and Sailors Monument, it's about, 40 feet high and, yeah. 15, 18 feet across. And it sort of sat there and people went around it and they built roads around it. And it was just sort of like, oh, that's there. Nothing to see here. Don't pay attention to it.
Absolutely.
But it had this historic significance. It's a beautiful thing. And it's the center of Detroit. And somebody, a whole group of people, realized that it had that it was an asset. And, and I think, talk about that for a minute. When you go, because your travels take you everywhere in your work world, and when you think about assets now in 2018, are they the same assets you had 1980 or 1950, or is it something a little bit different today when you talk about, I can build something out of this?
Yeah, well, as you know, an asset, an urban asset, or an asset in a municipality can be really anything. I mean, it can be a civic building, a grand civic building, the old city hall or state house or something like that. And it can be a street, just a really interesting, valuable street, or a public space, a public square, a park, what have you. I mean, it can be all kinds of different things, sometimes a waterfront, element. But really, it doesn't have to be any one of those things. Right. But it has to be a place that is not only notable to really be an asset, but a place that people want to be at and want to go to. So sometimes, and I think that you have to sort of separate is it an asset that really makes the city great, or is it an asset that's just notable? Because I think being a great old civic building that nobody really ever goes to is essentially this icon you look at,
but you don't participate with it.
Right. So I think that the question is how is that asset actually being utilized? Now, all those things are assets collectively, a great old historic building that's been restored, but it may be only used for, court uses is a great thing. But again, how do we actually use it? So things like Campus Martius, bringing back that as a place where people go to, and it's well programmed and it's well designed, where it accommodates summer and winter and light, heavy active areas, and light active meaning passive and programmed. I mean, it's active all the time for any number of reasons, and that becomes
that
a really important asset.
Do you find when you go to communities, small communities, big communities, or even neighborhoods within communities, that people truly understand what assets they have, or is it something that often has to be pointed out to them by an outsider like yourself if you're going in to work with a town you don't live in?
Right. I think it's very common where people sort of overlook, the thing that's right in front of them. And, what we often call the diamond in the rough, the thing that's there that needs to be essentially uncovered and polished off. And as I think we all do in our personal lives and maybe our business lives, that we're so used to or so on top of something that you don't see it.
Right.
It's right in front of you.
Hiding in plain sight.
See it, right. It's hiding in plain sight, exactly. And oftentimes it takes that extra view from someone else to really see the thing that makes it very valuable. One of the things I've noticed in many years of Detroit, in its decline over the last, couple decades, and the difficulties that we've had with people coming to Detroit and seeing it in the way that we saw it, which was we were seeing the diamond, even though it was still rough, we knew that it was there. But people would come here and, they couldn't see that. But there were often few people that would just say, wow, the fundamentals are so strong that it just needs to be polished off. And I definitely took note of those whenever that happened, when people would actually be able to see things that we may have tended to overlook.
But we talked earlier today about when we had lunch in Capitol Park in Detroit. And if you're not familiar with Detroit, Google Capitol Park, Google Campus Martius, and see some of the things we're talking about. They're really interesting places with interesting histories. But Capitol Park was a downtrodden spot 2 years ago, but certainly 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Had been for decades. And Tony Goldman, a guy who's often linked with Soho in New York and Miami Beach, and
right.
a developer that was really forward thinking, came to Detroit maybe a decade ago. He's since passed on, unfortunately. But when he came here, people had other things to show him to get him engaged, and he went to Capitol Park, which is this really cool little closed off triangular area with really cool buildings around it, and said, that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And everybody here in town kind of said, no, we got something better for you. He's like, no, that's where this whole thing's going to change. And I can tell you, having lunch there today, and having watched them and a part of a lot of this happened, it's not all the way there yet, but it will be very soon, and it's going to be one of the cooler spots, not just in Detroit, but in cities anywhere.
Oh, yeah. No, I've stated...
But that takes outside eyes, right?
Yeah, no question. I mean, well, definitely those of us who, you know, understand public spaces and sort of, you know, study public spaces would recognize the value of Capitol Park long ago, which, you know, there's no question. I've identified that as one of the best public spaces potentially that really exists in America. And it's because of that physical condition of the architecture that's there, the scale of the buildings, the enclosure that it creates, the opportunity to create essentially an urban room. That's evident. People can see that. But when you look at it on the surface, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, all of those buildings were empty. They were all run down. The park itself was, you know, filled with pigeons and dirty. And it, from the common sort of observer, this looks like a place I don't want to be.
Right.
But for someone who can kind of look beyond and see that diamond in the rough, this was amazing. And I've said again and again, that's going to be when it's all done, and it'll be done soon. I mean, a number of the buildings are just coming online, and they'll be done in the next year to 2 years. That will be the most active and the most important district or neighborhood, surely in the state of Michigan, and frankly in the entire Midwest, and one of the best urban public spaces in all of the country, in my opinion. I think it's a phenomenal place. But those are the kinds of things that many cities have, but they're just not either utilizing properly. They may not be even aware of
their potential. Well, let's talk about that for a second, because there's a kind of a new, I'll call it a new job title or specification within people working in communities, the concept of being an urban designer, which I know is something that you are. And I've often said at work, oftentimes we'll talk about going into communities and it's like, oh, well, the planners won this community because it's completely overplanned, or the traffic engineers won this one because, you know, everything's 4 miles wide and you'll never possibly get in a traffic accident anyhow, or cross the street, quite frankly. And you can see different things happening like that. And one of the concerns and one of the I think, criticisms is that those disciplines have always been sort of on their own island. You know, you go plan something here, you engineer it over there, then you hire a builder to build it over there. And you get to the end and it doesn't really work. It's a Frankenstein. And urban design, I think, tries to bring all that together, right? So when you talk about Capitol Park, you're really talking about good urban design. And is that the wave of what we're doing here from a city building perspective? Is that the missing ingredient when it comes to rebuilding a park or rebuilding a downtown or just making a good one better?
Right. Well, and urban design is, it's surely become more of a notable profession, if you will, or a title. But I think the concept of doing urban design is where many of these cities are benefiting from. And when I say that, it's urban design to me is where you integrate architecture and planning and the physical form of a place, including things like transit and infrastructure, into one sort of big idea and make it work to the best level that it needs to incorporate all those things, like you said, the different disciplines. So what we've seen in America is a real rise of the awareness of the concept of what is urban design, which is looking at it collectively. And when you look at it where it isn't run by the architect or run by the planner or created only by the traffic engineer or the transit engineer or the municipality for their interests only.
Sure.
You know, if it's individually created or run or renovated even by any of those individual disciplines, you really lose the potential. But when you're looking at the big picture and all those things come together, which is true urban design, that's when you uncover or unleash, you know, the beast in the case. And like what we're doing at Capitol Park, we're unleashing this potential that's been covered up for so long. And it's because when it's done, it'll be working on all cylinders. It'll work from the public standpoint, from the infrastructure standpoint, from the retail, from the housing, and from the architectural standpoint.
Yeah, the architecture in there is fabulous. The design is amazing. The park is very cool. There's a big statue in the middle of Michigan's first governor. Mm-hmm. It's the first site of the Michigan State Capitol before they moved to the Lansing. I mean, it's got everything there, but again, you just need to look at things a little bit differently, and because it, everything was there 10, 20 years ago and nobody saw it. So,
and it was completely looked over.
Absolutely. So let me get back up a second then, because you said urban designers try to get everything together and make it work. Make it work for who?
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends on the urban designer, but I think the goal of a professional who's in the built environment, you know, like myself and others, are really to create people, places for people. I mean, this is about, you know, creating places for people and places that, you know, I like to say, and I stole it from my friend Jim Kunstler, which is places worth caring about. I mean, that's I think a really important thing. So if that's your goal, and
he probably
really
had a few expletives,
maybe
attached to that.
And he's usually has a tasteful way of saying things in general. But I think if that's your goal, and you know, and overall you're looking at how do we build a great place for people, then that will drive a lot of these things. And that's not always the case, unfortunately. As we know, a lot of our suburbs were created for the cars, not for the people.
A lot of architects, you know, design buildings to look at
and to make a great building for their interests.
A lot of businesses don't think about their experiences, their employees when they put programs together. So I agree with that. I think that the people and the personal experience has to be at the forefront, because again, whether you're working for a business or whether you're a citizen or whether you're someone taking advantage of recreational opportunities or raising kids or whatever, all these different people, different types that use a city, that use a neighborhood, that use a place, are people, right?
Yeah. And that's what it should be. You know,
absolutely. I mean, I get it. You have to have certain setups if you're working in a hospital or working in an engineering plant or whatever. But for the most part, you're going to live your life somewhere 8, 10, 12, 15 hours a day, sometimes more. And it's got to work for the human species, if you will. And I think we forgot that a lot, especially in this country. And I think it always amazes me how people can go to the wonderful central squares of Europe and other places. Isn't this wonderful? It's like, yeah, we could have that too, but we don't want that. So,
building places for people has to be the priority in my mind, and it's often overseen, you know. And sometimes it's corporate interests, sometimes it's design interests, sometimes it's the interest of you know, a particular individual or group that's kind of in a lead position. I mean, they're and sometimes it's just because we want we're less focused on exactly what we're doing it all about, what we're doing things for, which is oftentimes, you know, we need to get from here to here in a car, and that's very, very micro, you know, viewed, and ultimately it creates this sort of miss of what really we're all about. I mean, if we're not building for people, what's the point? I mean, we should be building for what we are and for the human condition.
Right. And that starts obviously with a shared vision for a place. That vision could be between community leaders. It could be between residents and builders, or a business looking to locate somewhere, or someone looking to put a park in, whatever it might be. How is that tougher today to get that shared vision than it was? You've been in elected office how long now? And
9 years.
9 years.
Elected, and another 10 years is appointed.
Yeah, so go back 20 years. Was it easier to get consensus around what ought to be happening at the end of the block 20 years ago as it is now? Or is it harder? Which one is it? Or is it the same?
Well, there are certain aspects where I think it's become easier. In some ways, it's maybe become a little bit more challenging. I think one of the things that I've started to really realize is that there's...
You sound like a politician now. It's easier, but it's harder.
I am a little bit of that, but the reality is I'm more than interested in trying to get problems solved, and that's what we ultimately are doing, is solving the issues. You know what I like to say is we're making our challenges, we're fixing our challenges, and enhancing our assets, making what we already have better and fixing the things that don't work, right? But one of the things that happens in the public dialogue is that we often miss the fact that a lot of people don't like to deviate from what they're comfortable with, which is the change. You know, we want to change it by adding this or subtracting that. Change is always difficult for a lot of people. So you have to make a case for how whatever it is you're going to change. And ultimately, you know, when we're city building, we're changing something.
Right.
Like I said, we're either enhancing what was there, or we're fixing something that doesn't seem to work very well. But it's going to be different. It's going to change. It's going to be a variation from what's there and what right. has been. Even Capitol Park. I mean, there are plenty of people
consensus.
That didn't want that
Absolutely.
To change. And so this idea of change is key in terms of getting things to move to the next level. And one of the things that we have to do is be better at communicating what the values are of that change and have resiliency in terms of believing in the background information that we have or the gathering of information or creation and communicating the vision of what could happen. And convincing, you know, everybody involved, stakeholders, landowners, buildings, residents, whatever, that when we're going to alter this, that it will have these benefits. And sometimes that's not been communicated well. And
no.
that becomes where people don't like to, you know, participate.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is communication. And nowadays with the way that we've learned a lot about public discussion and public discourse and public interaction, over the last 30 years, I've seen a lot more involvement in that now. So the embracing of ideas tends to be something that is of higher value today
right.
than it used to be.
Yeah, the short answer on public interaction or engagement, if you will, is the easy answer is as little as possible, but the best answer is as much as you can get.
Yeah,
and
right. Yeah.
I think people that start off with the first one often wind up with the latter, whether they like it or not, because you know when we're talking about making real change, you've got to make it for the people who are there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's let's talk about that for a second, because that's also an issue, especially in a place like Detroit or other cities that have seen some decline, because you know here in this city you've got a city built for roughly 2 million people from an infrastructure standpoint that has now got less than 1 million people living in it, and as Detroit continues its comeback, and if you haven't been to Detroit lately, you need to come, because it's shocking the types of changes happening in the city almost on an everyday basis. But you've still got 750,000 people living here, and you got to make a great city for them, and you've also got to try to attract a whole bunch of people trying to bring that population back up, and businesses and everybody else. So you've got to both build a city that's attractive to outsiders and make life better for the people that live here. And that's a hard thing to do.
Right.
That's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
What's the urban design role in that?
Well, and that goes back to sort of, you know, kind of carries on with my last comment about how, you know, some people don't really want things to change and other people are all about, you know, a fresh view on things and all that. So when you're city building, you have to kind of figure out how to accommodate or integrate those two ideas, and they're very different. Oftentimes,
right?
You know, and I think I go back to the idea of urban design ideas or urban design concepts should have value to everybody. The people that live there already, the people that want to move in to an area, or you know, to come in from outside, it should have a value to all the people involved. And that, I think that's where when you do an urban design proposal or create some type of urban design initiative. City building initiative, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's redevelopment of an area or upzoning or changing the zoning or altering what was there, you need to focus on showing the benefit to all people. And that's showing the benefit to the people who don't want to change and the people who are accepting and as a matter of fact, they're excited about the change.
Right.
So you have two different places where they're coming from. But if you don't You can't accommodate one over the other just superficially.
Right.
You have to dig deeper into what are the fundamentals of things that don't work today, and sort of clarify that there's an awareness of what that
probably,
is.
Probably more art than science at that point.
Sometimes
I would imagine.
it's a finesse thing, you know, really clarifying. But a lot of it is being clear about, well, you know, do you really like what's happening here? I'm going to, you know, address that. And I think even the people that are reluctant to change will recognize some of those things that don't work if you can uncover them and clarify what they are and then work on fixing them. And then, of course, you know, the new people are a little bit just looking at fundamental baseline. I want to make sure that I get this, that, and the other thing, or I'm not moving here. So, you know, so it's a balancing act like most city building is.
So I hope we've got civic leaders out listening to this podcast right now and thinking about their own communities. If someone's out there thinking of, okay, I want to jump into something here, look at my community a little bit differently, is there something, some baseline work they could do as far as trying to establish where they're at right now, what you would recommend to them?
Well, I think a fresh set of eyes, I think as we more or less mentioned, is always very helpful. And this idea that even though you may have great understanding of the community that you're part of, whether you've been there your whole life or whether you've been there for a while or whether, you know, at a high level or a more sort of secondary level of involvement, being able to step away and take a look at it from a fresh perspective, either by getting into, you know, going around and seeing what other people are doing, so you see what can happen in other cities, then you come back to your city with a different perspective. That's usually helpful. That's part of the reason why, you know, my partners and I like to travel globally to study what's happening in places in Europe, places in Asia, all over. And we want to just see how other people are addressing similar issues. We're all human beings in all the cities of the world, and we all have to get from point A to point B. We all have to live, work, and play. So the same kind of things are happening in Tokyo as they are in Luxembourg, as they are in Cleveland, but they're done differently. So get out and see what's going on in other parts of the world, other parts of your state, other parts of your, you know, even in your neighborhood or metro area. I mean, anything like that is very helpful. But then ultimately, the other option is to start talking to people who have expertise or a different perspective and get an interaction there. And that's what we often end up finding ourselves doing.
Yeah, so that fresh set of eyes, I mean, sort of the Tony Goldman thing we said before, he ultimately didn't do a lot of direct work here, but that was, I think, very important. I remember just talking to people saying, that's what he wants to do. And people were just sort of blown away by that because it was like number 15 or number 24 on most people's lists. And in comes this outside set of eyes and they want to do something a little bit different. I've seen that too, especially in a lot of small towns where you roll into them and you know, a city manager, a mayor pulls you aside, wants to tell you about something else, and you're looking across the street at a dilapidated, old, but beautiful, architecturally important building. What's that? Oh, well, that's the old hotel. It hasn't been open for 20 years. It's like, well, that's the biggest thing in town right there, and it's pretty cool. You got to figure that one out.
And, yeah.
And they want to tell you about, you know, new car wash down the street or something. Right. So, and fresh set of eyes.
And I think the other thing is that there are a lot of communities and a lot of people in different, you know, whatever their condition is, wherever they happen to be, and you know, in a city that's really active or a place that's not really active, a small town, a village, a suburban city, a suburban town, or a very urban, a long history, that oftentimes people are reluctant to recognize that that there's always something of value. You know, there's always something. I mean, I have a glass half full perspective on, you know, life in general. Surely when I go to a city, I'm looking around and I'm saying, yes, this is a value, that's a value, this is a value. And even in the most challenging places, I mean, I've been working here for 32 years in Detroit. It's been very challenged for many of those years. But there was never a time that I came into the city and said, it's hopeless, forget it, I'm out of here. Because I always knew that there was value in a lot that I saw just needed to be done. In every city that we work in, every city that I go to, I never walk out thinking, ah, there's nothing here, just
shut
doze
the doors.
Yeah, you know, take it down, it's dead. I mean, always seeing a value. Some are more challenging than others, whether it's suburban communities, urban
What's
communities.
What's an example of something where just doesn't look like an asset, but something folks have made something out of? Do you have something come to mind for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've worked in you know, post World War II communities that have wide streets and very auto centric, and a lot of, I think, urban designer, urban minded people would say, yeah, you know,
can't
there's really
here.
Nothing here, you know, but we found again and again where there's people there, there's businesses, there's investment. And in many cases, there's civic leadership where they kind of get that, yeah, well, we may have been dealt a card, you know, that doesn't have all the great things that an old city or a walkable place or a pedestrian-oriented place or a mixed-use environment. But we do have great businesses and great people, and we do have, you know, proximity to something, and we're adjacent to this community or that thing or this. And you start to rethink what you've had in a different way. So maybe it's through zoning, maybe it's through, you know, working with the development community, and the municipality starts to look at things very differently with different sort of baseline. Instead of the car-centric orientation that it was maybe in 1958, you now start looking at how do we make this more people-oriented, more walkable, more pedestrian-oriented. So we look at changing our zoning. We look at maybe our orienting the way buildings are designed. Maybe that we change the criteria for development by way of how much cars, you know, maybe even the width of the streets. Do we need 13-foot wide lanes, or can we have 11-foot wide lanes? That can be a big change, just that alone. Changing the nature of the infrastructure so it accommodates the car, but encourages pedestrian-oriented walkable environments. You know, do we need 5 lanes, or can we get by with 3 lanes? Yeah. You know, those kinds of things. And that can have a huge difference. And those are assets that are waiting to be uncovered, and those are positive things that are waiting to happen. And I think every community's got a place to go in that regard.
You know? Sounds good. Sounds good. So as we wrap up here, any trends you see that are things maybe popping up now that you're finding in your work, you're finding in your own community that are things you say, we got to figure this one out over the next 5 to 10 years or 6 months for that matter?
Well, it's two things. It's trends or things we have to figure out. So I would say if we stick with the trends, you know, what I've recognized in the last, surely the last 10 years, and it's been growing for 20, 25, 30 years, is the real demand for walkable, pedestrian-oriented places. Right. I mean, that is just...
That's not going away.
That's a fundamental trend that's just become stronger and stronger. And, you know, I've always believed in that, and I always loved, why do I love this street versus that street? Why do I love that city versus that city? It's because it's been built more for me as a person than this other place. But what's happening now is the awareness of that is increasing. So now the values in those kinds of communities that are built for people are increasingly, you know, going up. The value and the need and want for people to be in those areas, to recreate, to move their offices, it's increasingly, that's where the trends tend to go. And they've been building and building and building. And now it's just, there's no turning back from my perspective. It's very, very, we're on very solid ground to see that people-oriented places are where we need to go, because the demand, the demographics are really screaming out, this is where we want to go. Old, young, you know, all across the board. And so I think the trend is, how do we build our cities to make that, you know, a place that you want to be in? And that goes across the board from an old town to a new town. And that's exciting.
Yeah, I like to say, you know, the irony of city living in 2018 is that as the economy gets more global in nature, the human experience gets more local, and I think the two go together. I think people will figure out both of them and sort of accept both of them for what they are going to move forward. The communities that do that, the neighborhoods that do that, that allow for people to flourish in both environments, work globally and live their life locally, is something that's going to be very important. Mark Nikita with Archive DS and with the City of Birmingham, where can they find, if folks are interested in your work, where can they find out more about it?
Well, archiveds.com, which is, DS is for Design Studio, but we go by Archive DS. And you can read about us at archiveds.com, or I'm on Facebook, Mark Nikita. You can put me on Facebook. I'm posting most every day, and it's all about urban design and urban planning issues and projects that we're working on.
Fun to watch your travels around the globe, literally. So how many countries?
29 countries, I think, I've been to, four continents, about 400 plus cities.
At least, what, 3 left, right?
Yeah, I got a couple left.
I'm just kidding.
Plenty to do yet.
All right, fantastic. Thanks a lot, and thanks again for the listeners for joining us here on the Economics of Place podcast. Look forward to talking to you next month with our third edition of the podcast. Have a great day.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org. And join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.